Hey, this is Richard Campbell. Just a quick reminder that this show was recorded way back in early February before the pandemic had really spread. And so there's really no mention of it whatsoever. Our shows in May will include more pandemic conversation.
From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Nguyen announcing show number 684, Exchange in 2020 with guest Garrett Gudger, recorded Saturday, February 29th, 2020. Run As Radio is produced each week by Sound Thoughts LLC. For more information, visit soundthoughtsllc.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell. Thanks for listening to Run As Radio. Bringing back one of my friends, Gareth Gudger, who is a Microsoft MVP specializing in Exchange and Office 365. Gareth started his career back in 1999 working on NT4 and Exchange 5.5, and for most of his career he's held a consulting role, primarily delivering Microsoft technologies to businesses, and he holds several Microsoft certifications, including an MCSE in messaging, an MCSA in Office 365, and he blogs at Super Tech Boy, that's T-E-K, Tech Boy, where I regularly retweet some of the stuff you do, because I turn to you for Exchange expertise, Gareth. Thank you very much for coming back on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Richard. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, good stuff. And Exchange continues on. You know, amazing how important mail is. Not going away.
Yeah, it's interesting how many other technologies email has survived over the years. And there was a funny T-shirt that some of the Exchange MVPs were wearing a few years back, where we listed out all the other technologies that Exchange has survived over the years. So it's a good T-shirt. I think I did see it crop back up at the last MVP summit. I'm almost expecting to see it again at this MVP summit. So
recording before the MVP summit, but I think I publish after the MVP summit for this show. So it's one of those balancing acts.
Yeah, time travel.
Well, but 2020 seems to be a pivotal year for Exchange on-prem, especially. I mean, I know you're doing a lot of work migrating folks into the cloud for mail because it's hard to justify being on-prem. But these latest sort of updates, the push for basic auth and things, these all seem to be more symbols of you need to be in the cloud.
Yeah, and it, you know what? It could also be a driving factor for some people to say, I can't go to the cloud yet.
Interesting.
You are pushing all these hard requirements onto me now.
Right.
So, Microsoft has previously announced this. They've re-announced some of the security requirements again in a blog post back in, I think, early February. Mm-hmm. Of some of the requirements that are going to come down, for example, you know, all the basic authentication is going to get blocked on October 13th unless that date gets pushed back, which... Right. We haven't heard that it has.
But it's not something you should count on.
Yeah, you can't count on, hey, Microsoft's pushed things back before, so maybe we'll be okay. But, you know, that could stop some people. You know, maybe it's a budget reason, maybe it's a resource and time issue, where they just say, hey, I was planning to go to the cloud this year, but gosh, now I'm not going to be able to use my older Office clients that I don't have the money to, or time to upgrade.
Right.
So, for example, this requirement where it's blocking basic off, you know, I would say the number one big impact right out of the gate is that's going to affect your Outlook clients.
Sure.
So, you know, people that have been hanging on, trying to, you know, keeping their Outlook 2010 client hooked up to Office 365, that's now not going to be an option anymore. So your Outlook 2010 is completely gone. Outlook 2013 will work as long as you've got all the right patches and registry keys in place. But again, you know, I'm doing a project right now where I have an organization that still has a fairly large Outlook 2007 deployment. So, you know, for them, it's, you know, it could be an argument to say, well, how quickly and how soon can we get this upgraded? you know, do we just stay on-prem at that point, right?
Yeah, well, you're going to stay on-prem until you can retire some of those older clients. Until those things are retired, you really aren't going to be able to move to the cloud by this fall.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as consultants, we always want people to be on the latest and greatest, right? We as consultants, we want to be, you know, cutting edge. We like to press all the buttons and like to see all the, you know, the latest bells and whistles. But, you know, when reality sets in from a business, you know, maybe the budget isn't there, yeah. You know, or the budget or prior, you know, priorities are elsewhere, right? IT often isn't the core business.
Yeah.
So the priorities are elsewhere, or sometimes more often than not, it's not even a money question. It's more of a, my team is just buried in other projects that have higher priorities. We just don't have time to do these upgrades right now.
Yeah. You're not going to get to them. Although this does seem like something you'd want to contract out because it's kind of a one-time thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's, you know, as consultants where we can come in and augment their team and help them get from point A to point B. So yeah, generally, these projects are a perfect candidate to bring in a consultant or Microsoft partner to come in and help you guys get to the cloud, right? You know, get all the prerequisites met and get to Office 365.
The other aspect I think that's interesting with Exchange is that it does interface with a lot of other applications. So I got to imagine when you're looking at an upgrade like this or retiring an entire authentication protocol, it's not just client machines. It could be other services you're using.
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, anything that's doing an integration, say, with Exchange Web Services,
right?
They're going to have to use Modern Auth as well. So, you know, some of the examples that spring, you know, straight to mind are, you know, voicemail systems or unified mm-hmm. messaging systems like a Cisco Unity or something like that. And I could be wrong here. Maybe Cisco's already done the work to make modern authentication a thing. But that's just one example that I can think of.
Well, and I would bet that Cisco's done the work, but only on the latest version. So you better be fully patched, which means your licensing is up to date, like da-da-da-da-da-da. Suddenly the cost of this and the complexity of this just jumped up three notches.
Yeah, definitely. So maybe it's, like you said, it's also, hey, as a prereq or maybe I'm already in Office 365. Now I have to go upgrade my, my Cisco Unity system or something like that.
All that voicemail stuff.
Or maybe it's a fax solution or something like that. That, you know, whatever it might be, it could also be something more simple like a ticketing system that's logging into EWS to pull email out of a mailbox.
Right.
It's doing that from EWS. I have seen a few of those systems doing IMAP, mm-hmm. which is also another protocol that's going to be affected.
Because there's been secure IMAP for ages. This is a question of whether you implemented it or not.
Yeah, so Microsoft's just announced as well in that same blog post that they've added modern authentication to the IMAP and POP protocols just recently.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so you know, so that's now available. Now it's just a matter of, you know, which clients that used IMAP have that option, and also which integrations, more importantly, like that ticketing system that's using IMAP, does that support modern authentication to pull those messages out? After the Outlook client, the EWS, the IMAP integrations, those are definitely going to be the next biggest. Those are going to be the things that are definitely affected next. I don't think there's a ton of people connecting IMAP and POP to Office 365 anymore from just like, say, a Thunderbird client or something like that. Hopefully not. Hopefully they're using an Outlook client to get a much more richer experience of having that full Exchange connection to Office 365.
Now, in this blog post, they did offer a tool that lets you sort of check to see where you were using basic auth in your Office 365. But it required advanced AD?
Yeah, so they have the Azure AD sign-in report. Mm-hmm. And actually, if you log into Azure AD, so if you're just going through, say, like portal.azure.com and you log in and click on Azure AD, one of the items on the left-hand side is like a where you can just click on sign-ins, and then you have various filters and stuff like that. And you can see, you know, who all was connecting, were they successful, was it a failure, if the user agent pushes it through, what client they were using, and then also you can see if they were using Modern Auth or some other kind of authentication mechanism.
Right.
Right now, based on that blog post, they are saying it is a You can only get that report if you're on Azure P1.
Right.
They did mention, and maybe by the time this podcast releases, they did say that they will make that report available to everybody.
Yeah, and it's interesting, they were just leaning on that premium service because it was already built into that rather than having to roll something new, not realizing, hey, not everybody has that premium service.
Yeah, I think the sign-in rapport has been around for quite some time.
Yeah.
That I'm aware of. I'm not sure how long they've had it at this point.
Well, and I'm not going to attribute to malice. That can be explained by just not, you know, that didn't know. You know, I'm sure all the Microsoft employees have all the premium everything and just like, oh, you know, there are other people out there.
Yeah, we're all M365, E5, and we have everything.
Yeah, well, so being MVPs, like, we get that. So same thing. Like, I think we're beholden to a lot of that stuff too, but it's like, that's not true. You know, I think one of the things trying to keep me grounded, I have good friends that are working IT in the field with regular pricing on things. And so they're not going to have P1s if they don't absolutely need it. And they're like, what are you doing to me?
Yeah, I've definitely had egg on the face once or twice when I'm like, hey, here's my test tenant. I'm going to show you this cool thing called advanced e-discovery.
Right.
And let me show you how it's better than the regular e-discovery. And, you know, about 20 minutes later, the client just puts their hand up and says, we don't have that license.
Yeah, and we're not going to buy it for this.
I've just spent 20 minutes explaining something you don't have a license for.
Yeah, you can't right. actually do. I don't know. I think it's a challenge doing your job well to know you're in a bubble too, right? Like that we absolutely have this vulnerability and we've got to sort of push back on it. I got to also think that some of the older folks using older phones against Exchange are going to get bitten by this auth restriction.
Yeah, definitely. So we've started to see that some of the native mail apps on mobile are starting to support modern auth.
Right.
The native mail app in iOS on the later versions of the OS are supporting it. Mm-hmm. I think Android's a little bit all over the place when it comes to that because there's so many different implementations and flavors of Android out there various manufacturers and.
And the cell companies, like so many people have a right to control Android. Like we are annoyed by Apple forcing upgrades all the time, but it sure makes the ecosystem simpler for IT. Android, yeah. It can be anything. Like it's just,
yeah,
you know.
Because it's really an open source project and everybody's implemented it differently. And that's almost the story behind ActiveSync as well. I mean, Microsoft basically said, hey, here's ActiveSync. And everybody kind of implemented it a little bit differently.
Wow.
And over the years with on-prem, that's why you would see issues like, hey, I've just upgraded to my Exchange 2016, CU, whatever, and now my all my Apple phones don't work, or a certain version of my iOS Apple phones don't work.
Right.
My Androids are all fine. And it was because everybody had implemented ActiveSync differently.
Yeah.
And again, it's the same kind of thing here. You know, they're still implementing ActiveSync differently, but some of the native apps are now supporting modern authentication. So if you've got people on the latest and greatest phones, or they're able to get the latest and greatest iOS upgrade or on their device, then great, that works for them. That said, though, I think you're a lot better off going to the Outlook mobile app.
Yeah.
Not only because that app natively supports modern auth, but then you're getting all the benefits of additional Office 365 features, assuming you have the license, where you're, implementing, application policies onto Outlook, where you can say things like, hey, I don't want that user to have the ability to copy data out of the Outlook mobile app into a different app,
right.
for data loss, or even between accounts in the same app. And then, from a financial and support standpoint, you can make a statement with your company just saying, hey, I'm just going to support this one app. I don't have to support every native mail client under the sun. All we do is support this one app. So block your ActiveSync clients. Just put a rule, whether it be a conditional access policy or a device access rule, to just allow Outlook Mobile. And then your company only has to support one mobile right. app for everybody.
And a free piece of software, too. I have to admit, I recently, sitting beside a buddy of mine at coffee last weekend, and he was fighting with an email app, and he just wanted to pick up from his Gmail and from an old Hotmail account, which is clearly his Outlook. And I'm like, have you tried the Outlook client? And he's like, no, we sort of went back and forth, and he literally looked at me and just handed me his phone. I wasn't asking to install it, but it's like, I guess I'm installing it. Right? And it's kind of nice. It's not my account. It's not my phone. But I got to tell you, I installed the Outlook app. It recognized the two accounts were already in the system somewhere and said, do you want me to hook these up? And I'm like, yes, please. And bunk, bunk, there they were. And I kind of handed it back to him. It's like, you're amazing. I'm like, no, it was really easy.
Well, the nice thing too, as well, is, you know, the trouble you always had with things like ActiveSync and various other MDM solutions is that it could wipe the whole phone.
Yes, right? Good.
If it's lost, stolen, or somebody just leaves the company, can I wipe their whole phone?
Yeah.
Not really. But with, you know, depending on, you know, if you got Intune set up the right way and you've got all your application policy set up the right way, you could just wipe that one single corporate account out of that one app.
Just the one account disappeared, the other, his own personal Gmail would stay in place.
Right.
And that's impressive when you think about what we're actually pulling off there.
And if that doesn't win people over, I just switch on dark mode in Outlook Mobile and everybody geeks out and it's a win. So
I love it. The magic powers of dark mode. It's always, there's always a, I used to call them lollipops, right? What is the thing that gets the user inspired to want to try the new thing? What's the lollipop? And now it's dark mode. Who knew? If all we need to do is be able to change colors, it would have been fine.
Yeah, I've got a few blog posts on there on how to switch everything to dark mode in your life. So I did get a little bit of, I was getting a little bit of crap from some of the other MVPs. Like, oh yeah, you're the dark mode guy. I'm like,
yeah.
I have written a few blog posts on how to put Teams in dark mode, Windows in dark mode, you know, so my Windows Explorer is in dark mode, you know, Outlook Mobile, Outlook, you know, all of it. Any Microsoft app that I could figure out how to put into dark mode. You know what, there's probably still a few blog posts out there, you know, right. I could say, hey, how to put your Azure portal in dark mode, but those are a little simpler. I think I've written enough dark mode blog posts at this point.
Yeah, talk about being typecast as a community person, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And Gareth, I'm going to interrupt for one moment for this very important message. If keeping up with the growing amount of security patches and managing complex Microsoft in-place upgrades are becoming a pain point within your IT department, Barramundi Management Suite is the solution. The Barramundi Management Suite gives you real-time lifecycle management of all network endpoints, from classic Windows and Mac to iOS and Android devices. Barramundi software automates time-consuming tasks, including Windows migration, software installation, inventory, and backup. Whether you manage IT for a small company or a global corporation, Barramundi optimizes endpoint management, frees time for new projects, and reduces IT costs. Check out www.barramundisoftware.com to receive your Run As Radio 25% discount and info for a 30-day trial. And we're back. It's Run As Radio. I'm Richard Campbell. That's Gareth Gudger. We're talking a little about Exchange now here in 2020. What other technologies do we need to be worried about going forward here? Because it seems like it's the time of retiring, isn't it? A lot of old protocols and stuff are being turned off. We're trying to bring our security up a level.
Yeah, so we've got Exchange 2010, obviously, going end of life in October. That was originally in January. And then Microsoft gave everybody a bit of an extension there saying, hey, we realize a lot of our customers need more time.
Here's another 10 months. Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. So, you know, and they kind of realigned it with a few other, you know, basically it was the same date as a few other products. I believe SharePoint 2010 is going end of life the same date. And
right.
Office 2010 is going end of life the same date. And I think it might be the same date for the basic off going away in Office 365. So,
wow.
A lot of stuff all happening on October 13th.
Tell me it's a Friday, because that would just round out this like Black Friday.
Absolutely.
All Friday, this stuff Friday the goes 13th, dark.
Right?
It's a Tuesday. Okay. Not that sexy. Tuesday, yeah. Not the same impact, but okay.
That makes sense, though. Microsoft does a lot of stuff on Tuesday.
Yeah, right? It's a patch Tuesday.
But yeah, so there's a lot of those products that are going end of life. And with Exchange 2010, though, even though Exchange was extended to October, for most people, they put 2010 on Server 2008 R2, which is end of life.
Yes.
I didn't see a lot of Exchange 2010 installations go on Server 2012. So technically, those are the only people that are really still in full support there or extended support. The big best kept secret, though, which it seems like not a lot of people know about, though, is a lot of the TLS changes that are going to come down in June.
Hmm.
So Microsoft is deprecating TLS 1.0 and 1.1 in June, and I can't remember the exact date. But what that is going to affect is some of these older operating systems, such as Windows 7 and how they connect to Office 365. And Windows 7's already out of support, but we still have a lot of people using Windows 7.
For sure, yeah.
Connect to Office 365. Now, there is a way around that, and it's not based on the version of Office you have. You could have Office Pro Plus on Windows 7, and it would still break. Hmm. The issue is that Windows 7 by default is trying to make Office Pro Plus use TLS 1.0. It's basically saying, hey, your default protocol for any WinHTTP app is TLS 1.0. And with a bunch of patches and registry hacks, you can tell Windows 7 to do TLS 1.2.
Right.
So after June, you would be good if you, you know, get all those patches and registry keys in place.
Yeah.
That said, hopefully you're not using Windows 7.
Yeah. You are talking about an out-of-support operating system, and it's kind of time.
That said, though, we know there's a lot of people still out there using it. In the last 6 months, I did run into two Exchange on-prem environments that still had Exchange 2000 free servers in their environment.
Wow.
They weren't doing really anything production, so most of their stuff was over onto Exchange 2010.
Right.
But in both cases, they still had a journal mailbox that was around and still stuck on a 2000 free server.
Wow. And probably wasn't migrating easily when they were setting up 2010, so they said, I will deal with this later, and never did.
That was exactly the case.
That's how old we are now, Gareth. It's like, you can predict these things if you've done this enough.
Thankfully, I haven't seen anything older than that in a number of years. I say that, and I'm probably going to run into a 5.5 box
you
somewhere.
You definitely jinxed yourself for a 5.5 experience.
I think the last 5.5 box I saw was probably in the early time last decade. So probably like somewhere 2013 timeframe, which is still ancient. I mean, it was a 15-year-old system even by that time.
Yeah, that time.
I think I ran into an Exchange 5.5 running on NT4, running on a dying Compaq ProLiant server.
Right, because pre-VM.
Pre-HP.
Before HP, before virtual machines. So it was a bare metal, ancient piece of hardware everybody was afraid of.
And, we actually P2V'd it on and got it up and running.
Nice.
On a virtual machine. And
when you spun that machine down, those drives cooled, all the bearings popped. Like it never turned on again. Right.
Yeah. I can't remember what the issue was, if that machine, like the power supply or the system board was going, or what the situation was. But we brought it over onto the virtual environment, and the Exchange database, checked out good. It said, hey, it's clean. We tried to mount it and it wouldn't mount.
Wow.
And the issue was that Exchange 5.5 back in the day before, Active Directory and stuff like that, Exchange had its own directory system. And when I looked at that directory system, it said, hey, this was corrupt. And I'm like, this was a precursor to AD.
Yeah.
And I know I can use, and I know it uses the same ESE, JET database. So I actually used the ESE util to repair that older version of essentially AD. That came back up, and then I could mount my databases and everything went through. But it's kind of that stuff in 2013, remembering stuff from 15 years ago. I'm like, let's try this. And
crazy.
I don't think I have that same luck with 2000 free. Those couple 2000 free servers, even though I did so much 2000 free, so many migrations from 2000 free, and I'm like, how do I use Exchange System Manager again? Where's this at? So.
Yeah, those are hard memories. And of course, I've had Ned Pyle on not a lot for a while talking about retiring SMB1 as very much the same sort of thing. It's like, you're going to find out when you turn off, when TLS 1.0 goes away, there's more stuff using TLS 1 than you know. It's kind of everywhere.
Yeah. And I just installed I was a little bit behind the curve on this one, but I did just install the 1909 Windows 10.
Yeah.
I'm reading the notes. It looked like they put TLS 1.3 in there. So I know that's something that I've been kind of curious about, when we're going to see more 1.3 in various Microsoft products.
Yeah.
It sounded like that was still kind of in an experimental mode, even for Windows 10, but, yeah, definitely curious when we start seeing TLS 1.3 in Office 365. Yeah,
and how that's going to impact things. It's interesting thinking. And I feel like we've just done a show about all the old stuff going away. Should we talk about some of the new things? Like, if you're an Exchange admin and it's 2020, You know, what have we not gotten around to besides moving to the cloud that we probably should be doing?
Yeah, so for Exchange on-prem, I mean, it's been pretty quiet. I definitely still have people that want to stay on-prem. They're becoming less and less all the time.
Yeah.
And actually, a lot of those are still 2010 installations. So it's like, hey, my 2010's going end of life, and it's either I go to the cloud or I go to 2016 or do some kind of a double hop.
Well, yeah. And you're gonna justify buying new hardware, setting up 2019 and migrating workloads. Like, can you justify that? Or if you're going to do that much work, just go to 365.
Yeah, and honestly, anymore, it's a conversation of, hey, you're migrating to Office 365 unless you have business reasons not to.
Right.
And you know, it's usually more of a, you know, that the migrations are going there, and, you know, what are your arguments for not going there?
Yeah.
I've only done maybe, I think I've only done like two or three Exchange 2019 projects.
Right.
It's been very, very light. You know, and obviously the question is there a version after 2019?
Yeah.
Not sure.
Well, we didn't think there was going to be a 2019 version, but they keep adding stuff to Office 365, to Exchange Online, and then at some point they can make a cut to build out a 2021 and for those who still won't move or can't move.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of, when 2016 came out, there was a lot of rumors floating around.
That was it.
The last version. Yeah. I'm like, that we haven't heard that that's the last version. And obviously we got 2019.
Yeah.
And I've actually started to see those rumors fly up again that 2019 is going to be the last version. I'm like, well, we haven't seen anything definitive from Microsoft. No. I've always kind of wondered if the next version of Exchange is just going to be called Microsoft Exchange, and it's just going to follow a update model like Windows 10,
sure,
like server. You know, it's just going to be, you know, CU'd forever, and we're not going to give it a year or anything like that. So,
well, it's also a sort of acknowledgement that hybrid is forever, right? That likely, I don't find many places that did Exchange on-prem that moved to the cloud where they really got everything turned off.
Yeah, and you really can. I mean, we've heard it, I think, the last few Ignites now that Microsoft is working on solutions to help you eliminate your last Exchange server.
Right.
At least from a management standpoint, because you have to maintain that last server, because for just about everybody, they're always going to maintain DirSync, and AD, their local AD, is always their source of authority.
Yep.
Which, if that's the case, then your Exchange attributes on-prem are your source of authority.
Right.
And the only supported way to manage that is to maintain at least one Exchange server. Now, I think Microsoft will eventually get a solution, whether it's some kind of a multi-master model. That management need will, I'm sure, at some point will go away. The question then becomes, and I think this is the bigger piece personally, is the relaying.
Right.
I see most, you know, the bigger thing is, like, you know, I tell companies, hey, you have to have one server around just for the management piece.
Mm-hmm.
But generally, we have to have more than that because you've got things that need to relay to the cloud, and you need to make that highly available. So then that could be two or more servers.
Yeah.
There's always going to be, you know, multifunction printers, other apps that stay on-prem that need to send alerts or invoices or messages, you know, through a secure hybrid mail flow to Office 365. Now, Microsoft says, hey, you could just relay directly to Office 365. But how many security administrators are going to want to allow that many port 25s outbound?
Yeah.
On firewall? So I think security is going to win, and we're always going to have a single point out. Now, you could also say, well, I could do that with an IIS server. I could throw in a postfix box. But yep, at that point, why don't you just keep Exchange there to do that?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm totally with you. And it is interesting just to think of I'm sure at some point there's going to be a clear initiative of getting to zero on-prem. But it's not a simple thing right now. There are breaking points on that.
Yep, absolutely. And I think the other nice thing that we're seeing as well is in Office 365 is we've got the new Exchange Admin Center portal. So if you haven't looked to that, if you go into your old Exchange Admin Center and go to Recipients, you should see a button that says, "Hey, try me now," and it'll launch you under the new Exchange Admin Center. And it's still very much a work in progress.
Mm-hmm.
But it is nice because it is a similar look and feel to the rest of Office 365.
Yeah, it sort of speaks to this is where this stuff lives now, that it all has that same look.
Yeah, and we're starting to see, you know, those lines are continuing to blur. And we've been saying this for years, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that hey, it's not just Exchange Online or SharePoint Online. The lines are really blurring, and they're continuing to do that. I mean, you know, essentially at this point, eDiscovery is really just, you know, continues to be getting ripped out of Exchange and put into the Security and Compliance Center.
Right.
And we're seeing more of those tabs that were in Exchange Online start to disappear, and now they only show up in the Security and Compliance Center.
Yeah, that is interesting, isn't it? And because if it is going to live in the cloud, then these things break into, you know, different clusters, essentially. They organize differently because it maps to the roles that different sysadmins have.
Yep, absolutely.
All right. Well, what's next for you, Gareth? Where are we going to see you next?
Well, let's see. So, you may have seen me at MVP Summit because yep. this show might release
comes out afterwards. That. Yeah.
But yeah, I'm not sure. I don't have any other conferences yet planned for this year. So
I imagine you're going to get sucked into Ignite.
The company I work for, Blue Chip Consulting Group, mm-hmm. we do send about, you know, 5 or 6 people down there every single year. And, you know, as much as we'd want to send everybody, he just can't.
Yeah, I
know what you mean. You know, for me, it's like I don't need to go every year. I'd much rather have other guys that get that experience. And, you know, for me with MVP Summit, I'm like, that is the more value. You know, if I had to pick one conference per year that I could go to, it would be the MVP Summit.
Sure. You can't get better access to the product team than Summit. But Ignite, Ignite mantra's always been putting the engineers beside the users of their products. It is one of the reasons you go to Ignite, is that you can get in front of somebody who helps build Exchange.
Yeah, absolutely. So for the listeners that aren't MVPs, yeah, Ignite is the best place to go. Especially, you know, when it comes to Ignite, I always say that almost those AMA sessions are almost my favorite sessions.
Sure. Yeah.
Where you can ask them any question. And I think that there's usually a challenge I've seen in a few of those that if you can stump any of their guys, that you win a T-shirt or something. But yeah, the AMAs are great because you can really ask them stuff that hasn't been covered, or maybe you just need more clarification on stuff that has been covered. I always say that, hey, any of those conferences, right, whether it be Build or whatever conference that you go to, the AMAs are almost always the best, just because you're interfacing directly with the product group at that point.
Yeah, yeah, it's very, very powerful stuff. Well, I always end up doing podcasting things there. So, I mean, I'm going one way or the other. I just have a different experience from most people.
Absolutely.
But, you know.
And I think is the next one, they're not in Florida anymore.
Yeah, they're doing New Orleans this year in September.
So, maybe I should try and get to that one. That sounds like a good experience.
The thing I can tell you about the New Orleans Convention Center is it's stretched along the river, so it's very long. Like, you thought you walked a lot in Orlando? Just wait. Holy man. It's
yeah,
a long
absolutely.
Way.
If those conferences, you always want to make sure you take your Fitbit or whatever device you have.
Yeah, you're going to knock out any threshold you set there. And don't go for the fancy shoes. It is about protecting your feet. It matters because you're going to wear them out. It's a ton of work, but a great experience too. Thanks for the catch up, friend. This is great. All good things to be thinking about in the context of Exchange. It's going to be a busy year.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always a pleasure to be on your show, Richard.
You bet. And we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.